everybody. I'm Marion Kane from Laurel, Maryland, and I'm very happy to be here tonight, and I'm also very happy that I'm here so you can't hear my knees knocking or see them knocking. You might hear them. I'd like to tell you a little story about faith. It was a minister, a priest, and a rabbi went fishing. And while they were out in the boat, the priest said, "I think I'll go into that little store on shore and get something to eat." So he got out and walked across the water, got something to eat, came back and got in the boat. And the minister looked at him. The rabbi said a little while later, "I think I'll go over and get something to eat too." So he got out and he walked over, came back, and the minister looked at him again. He said, "My God, if they've got that much faith, I can do it too." So he said, "I think I'll go over and get something to eat." And he stepped out of the boat and went down to the bottom. So they pulled him back up into the boat, and he thought to himself, "I don't understand. Surely I have as much faith as they do." So he said, "I'm going to try it again." So he gets out, down he goes again. They pulled him back up. And he said, "I just don't understand it." So finally the rabbi turned to the priest. He said, "You think we ought to tell him where the rocks are?" I feel that I was very much prepared from childhood to be the wife of an alcoholic. My father died when I was 12 years of age, and my brother was 11 years older and my sister 6 years older. So I felt very definitely deprived of this parent whom I loved very much. And I had been taking dancing lessons with the idea that I was going to push Eleanor Powell and Ann Miller out of, you know, Hollywood and take over. And I gave that up, which was, you know, a great deal of self-pity involved there. And I didn't recognize it, of course, at that time. And then at 16, I went to work. Well, who doesn't go to work at 16? But I thought it was atrocious. And I went to work, and I supported myself insofar as clothes were concerned. How much can you buy on 35 cents an hour? But anyways, I did. And there was a certain amount of resentment there, except, again, I did not recognize it. I graduated from high school, and I had 5 days vacation and went back to work. And there again was a little bit of resentment, again, which I did not recognize. And we moved a great deal when I was a child. And as I was growing up, it wasn't because the bill collectors were behind us, but my father was a floral designer and was a very good one and was offered jobs in different parts of the country. As a consequence, all 3 of us were born in, you know, way off different places. And he wasn't a traveling salesman. And so we did move a great deal, which probably helped my insecurity to a certain point. But I felt that my parents loved me, but I didn't feel that my father loved me as much as he did my sister. Now I understand it more because she was a very sickly person throughout her childhood, and they almost lost her several times. And I think once you become a parent, you certainly can understand this feeling. But I didn't when I was a child. So there was the emotional immaturity that grew not to maturity, but to more emotional immaturity, which I carried with me into my first marriage. I was married to my first husband in 1953. And I knew that he drank, but I thought everybody drank. I didn't really drink all that much myself, but I certainly had no objections to somebody else. He seemed to carry it well. It didn't seem to bother him very much. And so the first few years of our married life were relatively normal. He was on the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, and he couldn't sleep on midnight to 8, so I, unbeknown to myself, when he was working, he would stop in the local bars, and they were always glad to give him a miniature to drink. And finally, in 1956, he left the police department because the doctor said that either he did or they'd scrape him up off the sidewalk. And that is sort of when the progression began. There again, I didn't recognize it. While I knew about alcoholism, I didn't know truly what it meant. And I can remember so many things now, you know, in retrospect, but I guess thank God for ignorance sometimes, you know, that we don't know the things that are coming or understand perhaps the things that are happening. He worked as an apprentice electrician for a while and did not make very much money, and I was working, but we managed all right. And then, as I say, the disease continued to progress, and he had his first bout with, took a bottle of Yellow Jackets. He found that he had coronary insufficiency, and he couldn't continue with his work. He was doing heavy commercial electrical work, which is wiring printing presses, and he couldn't stand this with his heart problem. So he was taking odd jobs here and there and very unhappy. This was a very bright man whose intelligence had never really been channeled into any particular direction. And we went along for a while. And as I say, during this period of time, he took a bottle of Yellow Jackets and he threw the empty bottle in my lap. This was a Saturday afternoon. And I said, "What did you do? Did you take all of these?" And he just looked at me. So I went to the phone and I called for help. And they came. And they put him into a sanitarium, which was near us. It's no longer in existence. And he had shock treatments. They never treated him for the disease of alcohol. This is when I found out about how much he really had been drinking through the years. And I was horrified. I really didn't know, you know, how much he had been drinking. And I was a person who was very impulsive, very impatient, and I wanted everything, you know, "Dear God, give me patience right now." Well, this was sort of the way I was, and I don't think I am that far removed from it today. However, whenever he would drink too much, I would go out and run up a $300 charge account bill. I was getting even. Well, I was making more money at the time, so who the heck was paying the bills? Me, you know. That makes a lot of sense, but this is just part of this first thing that we do here so often. I was never very honest with myself because I thought that honesty meant that I didn't steal. I didn't steal. But I was stealing from myself the things that are so important, but I didn't know. And it takes coming to Al-Anon to find out all about these things. I found out very early in my life, in my teens, that I was a manager. My brother, though being 11 years older than I, thought I had a good head on my shoulders and a lot of common sense. And I was very willing to share this with him. And therefore, when I married, I was more than willing to share it with my husband. And I tried desperately to manage him. In some areas, he would allow it, and in some areas, of course, he would not. But of course, as his drinking progressed, the drunker he got, the better manager I was. And of course, I always used the excuse, you know, that for heaven's sakes, I mean, he's drinking so much that I've got to manage our lives. You know, he's incapable of doing it. And I was also, I still am a great reader, but I read for a different reason now. I read to hide. I could make myself the heroine of the book, never the hero, but always the heroine. And the beautiful woman in Gone with the Wind and all this sort of thing. I could just bury myself in these things, and I could sit for hours and read. And I still can, but I'm reading now strictly for enjoyment, not because I have to hide from myself or anybody else. And so as, you know, the drinking continued, when he went into the hospital, this particular time. He came out of the day I picked him up from the hospital. He had had a shock treatment, and they told me that he should not drive a car for 48 hours. I picked him up, nor have, of course, any alcohol, but they didn't tell me that. And I picked him up, and he said, take me to Lee's, which was a tavern, a local tavern. And I said, no. I said, you're not supposed to have anything to drink, I don't think. And he said, you take me. And, of course, he was 6'2" and a half, and I was much thinner then. And so I didn't argue the point. He weighed over 200 pounds. I took him to Lee's. He could be very vocally violent, and I was very afraid of him. And so I took him to Lee's, and he drank on top of having had a shock treatment. And then he came home and took the car and drove it. And a friend of ours came over because I called him. And, of course, he didn't know anything about the program either. So we, when he came back, he told him that he was not leaving the house until he got rid of the alcohol that was in the house. We lived on a main thoroughfare, and he went out on our front porch and poured it like this so all of the people could see it. And I was very embarrassed, but I really don't know why I was, because I was one of those people that told everybody that my husband drank, because I wanted the self-pity. I wanted the pity that they gave me. It gave me a great deal of wonderful feeling when somebody said to me, oh, my God, Marion, how do you put up with it? You know, and I'd say, well, I have to. You know, poor little me. And it just, I thrived on this. And, of course, during a lot of this period, I had to support the home. And I probably did resent this. When I think back on it now, I'm sure that I must have. Although I was told at a period of, at about this time, that I could not have any children. And this was after 12 years of marriage. So he went out and bought, my husband went out and bought me an end table, two end tables and a coffee table to make me feel better. And so we went along this way for quite a while. He went into AA very briefly when I threatened to leave him. I've learned in Al-Anon that you don't make threats unless you follow them through. He knew I had no intentions of leaving him. I left him a note. I didn't have the guts to tell him. I left him a note and told him, go. He called me at work and said, Dad's birthday is this weekend. I don't want to hurt him. I said, okay, stay. So, you know, so then he went into AA. And I didn't know anything. I didn't even know that there was an Al-Anon program. He went very briefly, but he did stay dry for 3 years. During this time, he said, I am not going to make the bartenders rich, I'm going to make us rich. Well, we saved enough money to put a nice down payment on a house, to buy a car, fence, furniture, what have you. And I was just absolutely on cloud nine. I had all of the material things that I thought I wanted. I thought this was important. I had reached a certain status in my life that having nice furniture and a nice car, our home is little, it's very unpretentious, but it's nice. And but I thought that this was all the things that were important. Another thing to mention here is the fact of my insecurity of moving around so much. The last house we owned while my father was living, we had for 6 months, and when he died, we didn't have the money to keep it. So we had to let it go back to the bank. So that was the only house that we owned during my stay with my family. So owning a home meant a great deal to me, and I said, I'm going to put my roots down, and I'm never going to leave here. This is very important to me. So there again is a little show of insecurity, or how secure, how much I felt security was important to me. We moved into our new home in November, and he brought me some roses the day we moved in. This was a gentle, kind person when he wasn't drinking. And we were all settled in, and I thought, all right, now we've got everything. You know, we had a dog to take the place of the child, and I thought life was really great. By May, Warren had started drinking heavily. He started out by taking a little glass of wine now and then and asked me to join him. Well, I am not a good drinker at all. give me the bottle top and I'm drunk. I'm a cheap date. But he prevailed upon me, and I thought, well, all right, you know, if this is what he wants, I'll go along with him. So I had a glass of wine, and I don't even remember what I cooked for dinner that night. So that ended that, my drinking with him. I never tried that again. But he continued. He didn't stop because I did. Well, as I say, after 12 years of marriage, I got pregnant. And my doctor, whom I'd had for many years, said it was a virgin birth, and he was very proud of me. And so I was 2.5 months pregnant and didn't know it, and I had had some surgery, and I don't know what happened, but anyways, it was a miracle. And I was so thrilled, and of course my husband was so thrilled he stayed drunk for 2 days, and even, you know, took off work and everything. I mean, it was a day of celebration. Well, this sort of began the scheme of things during my pregnancy. I spent most of my time crying because he spent most of his time drunk. And I worried about the responsibility. Before, it was just myself. But then it began to feel the responsibility of bringing a child into this world. What kind of a life was this child going to have? I was very, very afraid. And I carried the child without any problems. I delivered without any problems. Warren was drunk when I delivered. And but that's beside the point. He was very happy about this. However, he never accepted fully sharing me with a child. And because I had always done everything for him, to laying his clothes out and fixing his coffee for him, you know, and bringing it in, not into the bedroom, but into the living room for him and so forth. And of course, he demanded that I wait on him hand and foot anyway. He'd say, get this and get that. And I'd say, you know, if he said jump, I'd say, how high? That's how much afraid of him I was. Well, when Eddie came along, and everybody knows what it's like, usually when you have a new baby, there's a lot of things to do, a lot of things to get adjusted to. I was 38 years old when I had this baby. He isn't really old. But it is when it's your first one. And I was afraid. I was afraid for the baby. I used to go in and look at him 10, 15 times during the night for fear that he wasn't going to be breathing. And I sort of ignored my husband because I was so taken up by being a new mother. And, of course, the drinking was getting heavier and heavier. When my son was 3 months old, we went to visit my mother and found her in very bad shape. And she had declined in 3 weeks to about 85 pounds. Well, this man I was married to was a kind man under all of this. And he said, Mom, you're going to come and live with us. So she came to live with us. And right after she came, she went into the hospital. So she had to be in bed for 2 weeks when she came home. I had then a five-month-old baby. I had an aunt visiting me from Albuquerque, New Mexico, who had not seen my mother for 26 years, my mother's sister. And they had a grand time talking with one another. I was up and downstairs 60 million times a day. And my husband was drinking and drinking and drinking. And I was feeling sorrier and sorrier and sorrier for myself. My mother reached the point finally where I could not leave her. I did not even get out of my house for 6 months, not even to go to the drugstore. I would go out and sit on my front stoop for a few minutes to get a breather. And my day started at 6 and ended at 10, supposedly. At least that was the time I used to sit down. There again, how many, many, many people have done the same thing and don't have to feel the pity that I felt for myself. I felt like I was carrying the whole world on my shoulders. I did not know that I was sick. I had no way of knowing. I thought that I was perfectly all right, that I was a very good mother. I was a good wife. I was a good daughter. I was a good sister. I was a good everything. Goody, goody two-shoes is what Warren used to call me. And I guess he was right. My mother died in 1967 when Eddie was 23 months old. She lived to see the miracle of a grandson born. She died in our home, for which I'm very grateful. I did not want her in a nursing home. It was a lot of care, but I loved her, and that's where I wanted her to be. And she passed away, and my thought was, thank God, she's out of it, and I'm not. There again, the self-pity. Warren, the day that my mother died, he was drunk 5 different times. He would drink, go to sleep, wake up, and I had to handle these things. My brother, of course, came over and had to handle all of these things that had to be done, the phone calls and so forth that had to be made, the people coming in. And I felt very sorry for myself again, and never recognizing again how sick and sick and sicker I was getting. And he was no help at all, and I felt very strongly about this because I felt the one time in my life or the 2 times in my life when I was pregnant and when my mother passed away, he wasn't there to help me. And this was a pitiful thing. I never stopped to think at that time how bad it was for him. I thought only of how bad it was for me. This is a very selfish attitude, and I'm not really very proud of it. After my mother died, Warren went into the hospital when Eddie was about a little bit before 2.5 years old, and I had to return to work. My one ambition of life was to have had a child and to stay home and be a wife and a mother. There again, I couldn't do it. I had to go to work. I was very fortunate in that I am a secretary and that I was able to get enough salary. The man that I worked for asked me how much I needed to live on, and I told him, and he gave it to me, which I scraped it down to the bottom of the barrel, exactly what I needed, but still he gave it to me and then added $30 more on payday. So, you know, things work out, but I couldn't see that. I couldn't see that I had anything at all to be grateful for. All I could see is what had been done to me. This man, what he had done to me. Not what he was doing to himself. I didn't even care what he did to himself. So I went back to work. And I gave him the silent treatment. And like I say, I was extremely scared of this man. So my way, like Holly was talking about her mother yelling at her father, the only time I yelled at Warren, when he was dead drunk in that chair and I knew he couldn't get out of it, then I would yell at him. Other times, I banged closet doors, cupboard doors, and pots and pans, and then he would say, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "Nothing, nothing's wrong with me. Scared to death. That's no way to live." I didn't have to live like that, but I didn't know. Well, these resentments throughout the years grew and grew and grew, and I didn't recognize them. In October of 1968, Warren had been in the hospital again, and he asked me if I would go to Al-Anon. And, of course, while he was in the hospital, I heard about Al-Anon, but I didn't know what it was, not really. And I thought to myself, oh, God, isn't that wonderful? He wants me to help him keep sober. I'll go. Anything. Because, you see, the only problem that we had in our house was the lack of sobriety. Everything else was going to be like the rose-covered cottage if he did not drink. Well, we all know that that's not always the case. Well, I came to Al-Anon, and I thought, this is really nice, but I don't need it. I'm a good wife. I'm a good mother. I'm a good sister. I was a good daughter. I'm Miss Goody Two Shoes. I don't need you. And so I stayed for 3 weeks until Warren started drinking again. And in that 3-week time, I want to tell you that I am one of the best Al-Anons because I had all 12 steps down pat. I read them. You know, well, that's easy. That's nothing. didn't mean a thing to me. I didn't take it in. There again, proof of how sick I was. Well, Warren started drinking again, but I continued to come to Al-Anon, and I am so very, very grateful I did. Because in 3 years, Warren was in and out of the hospital 10 times. I had asked my son to leave tonight because he doesn't know this, but most of it was for trying to commit suicide. And this is something that, you know, is not easy to live with. Whenever I hear anybody say something about taking their life, I really get angry. Because it's not only their life, but it's the other lives around them that they're dealing with. It hurts. And it does a lot of damage. But anyways, he went in and out of the hospital. He was in the Veterans Administration Hospital in Washington for one time for 3 months, another time for 5 months. He was in Spring Grove State Hospital for 2 or 3 times. And one time while he was in there, he called me, and I was just putting dinner on the table for Eddie and I. And I had just come home from work and finished cooking dinner. And he said, "I've got to see you right away." The old fear came back. I jumped. I said, "I'll be right out." I hung up the phone, grabbed the stuff off the table, set it on Eddie's lap in the car, and drove to Spring Grove State Hospital, which is a good half-hour drive. So I got out there, and he's waiting there with his bag. He had climbed out the window. He was going home, and I took him. And he said, "Drive by the church." I drove by the church. He said, "I'm never going to drink again. I don't ever want to go back to that place again." Because you see, what he was seeing out there is what can happen. He saw the vegetables. He saw the people who had to be told when they could go to the when they should go to the bathroom, when they should eat, to be led around, and it's not a pleasant sight. And I saw it too, and it's not a pleasant sight. I was becoming sicker and sicker. However, through the help of Al-Anon, I was able to cope. I did not use the program, I'm sure, the way that I was supposed to. But I took with me what I could, and that was strength of the people in my group. And that was giving me the love and the hope and the strength to get through each day as it came. Some days were not so bad. I felt a tremendous relief when Warren would go into the hospital. And I would busily clean the house and do all the things I had been wanting to do when I got home from work and do things with Eddie. And it was a great sigh of relief that he was in getting the care and I didn't have to look at him drunk in the chair. Our children are very often more affected by the non-drinking spouse. I feel this very strongly. I saw it in my own family. I've seen it in other families. The reaction that we have to the drinking, unless, of course, I suppose if there's physical abuse, but I think the reaction that we have to the drinking and the reactions that we show, the terror, the fear, the hatred, the resentments, the bitterness, all of the things that we feel, we pass on to our children. They see Daddy there drunk, but isn't he always? I mean, this is what they're thinking. And there doesn't have to be a fight if I don't start it. If I stay off his back and let him hit his bottom in his own way, there doesn't have to be that reaction in the home. There doesn't have to be the upset by the child. Well, I was working on the steps. And the first step a lot of people take and get very easily. Now, I told you earlier that I am a manager, and I am. And I still try to manage, but I got a guy now that doesn't let me too much, and I'm very grateful for that. But it actually took, you know, you hear about the mule, you've got to hit him in the head to get his attention. Well, sometimes I compare myself to that for the simple reason that I kept mouthing the words. But, you know, they were only from here and from here, not from my heart. And I didn't accept them in my gut where they count. So one night, Warren passed out in the bathroom. Well, now if visualize 6'2", 205 pounds, a very small bathroom. And he was wrapped around the toilet. And I thought, I can't leave him there because I don't want Eddie to see him. So I was then about 150 pounds. I'm not going to tell you what I weigh now. I decided he was going to come out of there. Well, he was no help. So I got him. I pulled him down the hall, into the bedroom, and up onto the bed, and pulled my back out. And I went out in the living room, and I sat there, and I cried because it hurt. I was hurt mentally, physically, and spiritually. And I thought to myself, this is what it means. I am incapable of managing my life, much less his. And I really and truly feel that at that time, I took my first step after 2.5 years in Al-Anon. I am not proud of it, but it's an honest program, and I have to tell you the way it was with me. But that's what it took me. Warren had accepted the fact that he was an alcoholic to a certain degree, but he never accepted the fact that he could not drink like other people socially. If we went out during the dry period for dinner and he asked for a Coke and they brought it with a straw instead of a swizzle stick, he would have a temper tantrum. Let's go home. And how dare they put a straw? What do they think I am, 5 years old? You know, I'd cringe down in the seat and think, oh, God. You know, like I say, I went around and told everybody about this, but strangers, you know, I mean, people in a restaurant I didn't know, I really didn't go up to them and tell them, and I was embarrassed. But when it happened in my own backyard, that was another story. But like I say, with the help of Al-Anon and the people in it, particularly the people, because they're what make the program, I got through the days. And I never will forget one time, one of Warren's days in the hospital. It was nearing Christmas, and my boss had died, and the business was in kind of a bad way. Warren, I did not think, had a job. And I had $8 in my pocket, and I had a little boy, and I wanted him to have Christmas. And I didn't know what to do. And I laid there for 3 nights, worrying about what was I going to do for this little boy for Christmas. So one day, driving to work in the car on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, I said, God, I can't handle it. I haven't any money. If you want this little boy to have Christmas, then you'll have to provide it because I haven't got it. And you know, I really did just turn the worry over. I really and truly did it. And I began to listen to the radio, and I sang on the way down to work all by myself. Anybody going by me probably thought, my God, what an idiot. And I was, but that's all right. I got to work, and my boss's son came out, who was then my boss, and he said, we found a way we can give you all a bonus. And I got $100. I got home. I can't believe it to this day. There was an envelope in the mailbox. Warren still had a job. Not only did he have a job, but he was covered by a certain kind of insurance that were he in the hospital for any length of time, he got $70 a week from this insurance, and I had a check for over $300. Okay, coincidence? I don't care what you call it. I let go of the problem, and he supplied it. That boy had Christmas. I paid bills. It was a good Christmas. So, you know, whenever we get out of the driver's seat and we turn it over and we let him have it, something happens. And it's usually something good. And I'm awfully, awfully proud that there are times, and I'm sorry to say, not as many as I would like them to be, that I turn my life and my will over to the care of God, as I understand it. I had trouble accepting alcoholism as a disease. There again was a case of, I had read a lot of articles on it through the years of his drinking. In fact, everything I saw that contained alcohol, I read. And I think intellectually I understood it. But again, I use that word, your gut wise, I didn't. I just could not accept the fact that this was a disease. Why is this man doing it to me? If he loves me, how many of us have said this over and over again? If he loved me, he wouldn't do this to me. Why can't we have a normal family life like Mr. and Mrs. Jones down the street? But it wasn't to be. And it took me a long time there again. Sometimes I think I'm retarded when it takes me so long to fully understand. But I think I am basically a stubborn person. And I don't think sometimes I want to accept things. And thank God, with the help of this program, I can find out these defects I have, and I can do something about them, and I can begin to understand, because then the door opens, I've got an open mind, and I begin to see what is really the truth, the honesty, the basis of the whole thing. I think that when Warren died, I fully, totally, completely accepted alcoholism as a disease. And I'll tell you about that a little bit later. Warren went back into Al-Anon, into AA, I'm sorry, for a while, many different times. And he worked sometimes the first and 12th step. And he would go out on 12-step calls and he would drink with the people he was 12-stepping. And this upset me very much. I was very anxious for Warren to get this program. And we would go to open meetings and he would invite me to go with him, and I would sit there and the poor guy would have bruises on his side from me nudging him about, "That's you! That's you!" You know, how many of you have done that, I'm sure. I know that in this program that anything I have done, I'm not alone. But I use the Serenity Prayer a great deal. When I heard the Serenity Prayer, and I've heard it for many years, it really never meant anything to me particularly. I always believed in God, but he was somebody who was kind of like out there. And I took that Serenity Prayer after hearing so much about it in Al-Anon, and I dissected it word by word. I made a list of the things that I couldn't change. I made a list of the things that I could. And I changed them back and forth and back and forth over a period of time. And I found out that the things that I couldn't change were in my alcoholic or other people. The things I could change were in myself, should I desire to do so. This meant a great deal to me. I love that Serenity Prayer. And I think that I did not use the slogans as much as some people, but I did use the Serenity Prayer. Everybody has to take, I guess, what is most comfortable or the best for them, and that's what I took, the Serenity Prayer. At one point, Warren came into the program, and he stayed for 7.5 months. And during that time, it was almost as if God was walking beside us. We had all of the things that we had not had for a long time. Because you see, I hated this man, I thought. Every time he walked in the door, I looked at him as if he were a nothing. That hurts. Him. All I was doing was pushing that remorse and that guilt farther and farther down his throat. Through the help of Al-Anon, I learned about the word detachment. I like to think of release with love. I kind of like that for myself. Anything I say here tonight is strictly my own feelings, my own opinions. And I know that I had to learn to detach. I knew that I had to learn to detach. And I didn't know how. I think that's one of the hardest things to learn, because I didn't know that it meant to detach from the problem and not the person. I didn't understand. And I think it's awfully important that we do understand. And then I began to pretend that I felt compassion and love for this man. And then, do you know, it happened. I could look at him with real compassion and real feeling and understand a little bit about what he might be going through. I don't think we can ever understand fully unless we walk in their shoes. And he couldn't understand how I felt unless he walked in my shoes. Well, Warren was sober for 7.5 months in the program. And during this time, as I say, we had communication. I learned to find out that he had all of these good qualities that had been buried for so very long under the heavy influence of alcohol. I found out that he was, again, a very kind, a very considerate, a very loving person. I found out that he loved this little boy very, very much, and that he loved me very much. And then, for some reason, unknown to him, because he told me so, and unknown to myself, of course, I saw his attitude begin to change. The criticism, the irritability, all of the things that used to be were coming back. And then he drank. He took that first drink. Well, I don't know about you all, but almost before they even come in the house, I used to get this feeling in the pit of my stomach, and it would just tighten up into a great big fat knot. And I knew when he walked in the door that he had had a drink. Well, of course, understanding that alcoholism is a progressive disease, whether or not you are drinking, he progressed. And he went back into the hospital. And he was in there for, I believe it was 2 weeks. And I saw the resentment in him, the bitterness that he couldn't drink like others, the desire not to live. All of the things that had happened through the years coming back again. We lost the communication. I had a very hard time with myself insofar as getting over my feelings of disillusionment and disappointment. I had to come down off my pink cloud in a crash. And thank God for Al-Anon and my friends with the phones and the literature and their love. I got through that period, and so did he. We went away on vacation right after. He went back to work for a week, and he was all right. And we went on vacation the following week. And we left on Sunday to go to Gettysburg, to Fantasyland. And by Sunday night, he was drinking again. We went up to my sister's up in Rochester, and she has a camp up in Bath, New York. And we went up there, and they were there, and Warren was on Antabuse at this time. And he was drinking on top of Antabuse. It's very dangerous. And we were in isolated country, nothing much very close to us. My brother-in-law and my sister were not used to anybody being around them who were heavy drinkers. My brother-in-law gets drunk at weddings once in a while, but that's about it. has a few beers. But he didn't really understand, and he was frightened. He said, "What would I do?" And Warren went out, and he was very sick out in the yard, and I asked him if he was drinking on top of the anabuse. I knew that he was drinking on top of the anabuse. Why did I have to ask him? You know, it was perfectly obvious he was drinking. He was bright red all over from head to foot from drinking on top of the anabuse. But I had to prove to myself, you know, that this man was drinking. And he said, "No, I'm not drinking." Well, of course, I knew he was. My sister and her husband went home on Friday, and Warren wanted to stay. And he got very angry with me. And we went back to my sister's on Saturday, and on Sunday we were invited over to my niece's for dinner, and Warren got dressed and decided to stay home. And he stayed there, and he stayed in that bed, except to get up and make his potty calls, until Tuesday, dead drunk. I took him home. He did not want to go. He said, "Let me stay a couple days. I'll get straightened out. I'll be all right." And this is one time I stood my ground. My sister and her husband were extremely nervous, and I did not like putting them through it. I wanted to get him home in our own house with our son. So we went home, and I drove 9 hours with him drinking in the back seat, and my feeling, again, very sorry for myself. And Eddie was very, very good. I stopped and got him lunch, and he sat in that front seat just as stiff as a little board all the way home. Very little conversation, which is unusual for a child. He was feeling the effects. And although I was not yelling or berating, I think it was just a feeling. I was very upset about all of this because he was talking very much then again about dying. We got home and I got him into the house, and that was on Tuesday. On Friday he began vomiting black blood. And this is when, like I say, and drinking vodka on top of it and throwing it right back up. Anybody who doesn't believe that alcoholism is a disease, watch it sometime. There'll never ever be a doubt in your mind again, as there certainly isn't in mine. He was very, very ill. I wanted him to go to the hospital, and he refused. He threatened both our lives, and he said, "I will not go. If I don't get you now, I will get you when I come out." I had gotten very sick again. I had been away from my Al-Anon and my Al-Anon friends. He would not allow me to use the telephone. Very, very frightened. And finally, he died on Sunday. It wasn't pleasant. It never is. I fell apart. I had all the feelings, again, of resentment. Why did he do this to me? Why do I have to put up with this, with the police, with the pictures, with the questions? Why? Why me? Why not me? What difference does it make? Who am I that these things shouldn't happen to? I felt a tremendous sense of relief that this man was gone, because I think I had truly reached my bottom during that period. I knew that something had to be done, and I did not know what. And I could not find the answer because I was so tired. I hadn't had no sleep since Tuesday. And I was exhausted, and I didn't know how to think or what to think. So some of my friends came in and told me that I didn't need to go back to Al-Anon. Before this, I want to tell you that Al-Anon and AA are something else. When this happened, you have never seen so many people come into a house. They took my dirty clothes, they took my laundry, they made my bed, they cleaned my house, they took my child, they fed me, you know, did everything but bathe me, and I insisted that I could do that myself. And it just was fantastic. My sister came down and she said, "Marion, I have never in my life felt such love." She said, "You actually can feel it emanating from these people. She just couldn't believe it. My neighbors had a church luncheon after the funeral. Warren had many friends in the program, and there were many, many people at his funeral, and it was a very, very lovely funeral. I'm sorry that this is the way that he had to go, and I prevail upon you again. My son does not know this, and I prefer that he doesn't right now. He's only 10 and a half. And I hope with the help of Al-Anon that someday if he does question, I will be prepared and that he will be prepared. But I think until such time, it's better that he doesn't know. This is just my own personal feeling. But anyways, these people came in and they were just absolutely wonderful to me. But after it was all over and everybody had gone home, there I was by myself. I took this child and I took him into my room. I wouldn't let him sleep in his room, which, by the way, is where Warren died. And I kept him in there with me. Everybody who asked us for dinner, it could be Joe Blow from Buffalo, I went. Now, mind you, I always got home in time to bathe my son and get him to bed on time for school. I did not keep him out late or anything like that. I just didn't want to be in that house. I kept running and running and running. Until he changed. He said, Mommy, one night, where are we going? I don't know. I can't remember. Somebody had invited us over. He said, gee, I wish we could stay home tonight so I could play with my toys. And I thought, oh, dear God, what am I doing to this child? I didn't even realize what I was doing to this little boy. So then I began to see that I needed to stay home. My earth friends, the earth people, told me I did not need Al-Anon, that I was not living with an alcoholic anymore. And I thought, that sounds pretty good. I don't need to go back, so I didn't go back. And I got sicker and sicker. And I don't know how much sicker you can get, but I sure did. This friend of mine called me, and she said to me, and I'm going to be very blunt, because she's very blunt, and I think sometimes we have to be. She said, you get your ass back to Al-Anon. And I got my ass back to Al-Anon. But, you know, a lot of damage had been done, and I needed a lot of help. And we went to Ocean City for sessions by the sea, and I became very ill the night of the banquet. While we were at the banquet, I thought I was having a heart attack, and fear took me over completely. And all I could think about was leaving this child as an orphan. And his grandparents were very old, incapable of taking care of him. My sister is older than I am. My brother's still older yet. You know, who's left? And I made out a will and so forth, you know, to be sure that everything was in order. And I was very, very fearful. And I've always had a problem with fear, but more so since Warren died. And I don't know whether it's because I was left older with a small child or not. I really am getting better, but it's taking a lot of work. We did work out pretty well. I went back to Al-Anon, and everybody was really wonderful to me. I really appreciated all the things that they had to share with me, and I began working on myself, really working on Marion. Because I realized a long time before that I had a lot of shortcomings and that there were a lot of things that needed to be taken care of as far as I was concerned. That maybe had I acted differently on occasions, that I would not have been one of the people to help Warren to drink. You know, in other words, what I'm saying is I was not responsible for the disease of alcohol, but I could contribute to the problem. And I did. And I firmly believe this. I don't think that we're ever completely blameless, but not for their having the disease. But I think that there are times that we nag and do all of the things that we did before Al-Anon that are wrong. So we did contribute in some way. This, again, is my own personal opinion. You can dispute it, and that's all right with me. That's your privilege. I started going out with Al quite a while after Warren died, and there was some controversy about going out with an alcoholic. He had been sober for some time, and my mother-in-law, Warren's mother, called me and talked to me about it. And I said, well, at least he knows what he is, and he's doing something about it. And she said, well, that's something to say about that. So we continued to go out, and I fell very much in love with this man. And I loved the program that he had, and I think this is one of the reasons I just couldn't get away from it. And I know, whenever you lead a meeting and you say you married another alcoholic, there are some people there that go, oh my God, how could you do it? But I went to Parent Without Partners, and I spotted 2 out of 14 that were potential alcoholics, and they didn't know it, but I did. And I want to tell you, I ran. I didn't want anything to do with them. I'd rather stay with my own kind and somebody who knows that he's got a problem and who's working on it. I felt a whole lot safer. We got married a few years ago. Al has 3 children. I have 1, so I say I have 4, 3 without labor pains. And I know that I'm still a sick person. I know I've got 1 heck of a long ways to go. And I know that after Al and I got married, he's in a business that takes him out in the evening. I better explain that. It doesn't sound very good. He's an insurance agent. And in the beginning, you know, this was my night on the white charger. He wasn't bald then, and he wasn't as heavy as he is. I snatched all his hair out of his head, he says. But we got married, and I felt a great possession for this man. In other words, you know, the ideal marriage is that Papa comes home at dinner time, and you sit down, and you have a lovely dinner, and everything is, the communication is so good, and you talk over the things that you did today, and then you sit there and you watch television and you do something very nice, and everything is just lovely and beautiful. But he was going out to work every night, so how can you do this, you know? And I was really being very nasty, and I did not realize it. You see, I had decided that all the years that I had stored up this fear of Warren, no man was ever going to make me that fearful of him again. So what did I do? I went the other way. I would just tell him anything that came into my mind, whether it was nice or not. So Al told me one night, he said, you're strangling me. I am not. Not me. There comes old Miss Goody Two-Shoes back again. She came tromping up the walk. But after he left, I began to hear in my head some of the things that I had said to him. And I realized that I was doing exactly that. And thank God this man has a program that he could recognize it. So I began to work on that, and I'm still working on it. I really don't mind Al going at night. I know that this is his job, and I accept this now, and it's a whole lot better. And there are times if I'm exceptionally tired, if I am not feeling well, if it's been a rough day, it may not be such a good evening. And whose fault is that? That's mine. That's my attitude. I have allowed myself to get into a position where my attitude changes and is not good. And that's something that I think that we've got to be aware of in our Al-Anon program as well as in the AA program, because I firmly believe that we should try to get our rest and take care of ourselves to keep our attitude on a pretty good even keel. It makes life a whole lot easier. I haven't talked too much about exactly what Al-Anon has done for me, but I'll tell you one thing, that if it weren't for you people and the tools of the Al-Anon program, I firmly believe that I would be in a mental institution today. I do not think that I could ever have survived without you and without the tools, without the love, and without the fellowship in this program. I have accepted God in such a way that I never accepted before. I always believed in him, but there again, I think sometimes I mouth the words. I don't know how much I really thought about God, except when I really needed him and was praying that he would take my husband's drinking problem away from him and bargain with him, I'll do this, and so forth, like many of us have. I have been able to take Al-Anon to my church because with the understanding of God that you have given me, I'm much closer and I can appreciate my religion in a much more spiritual way than I ever would have before. Turning my life and my will over to the care of God is still a problem with me. But there is one thing, I know that it can be done because I have done it, and I frankly have done it more than just one time. He's always there when I want him, but that's the whole trick, if I want him. Sometimes I thought he was waiting off in the sidelines to see what was going to happen to me bad enough before I was going to call on him for help. And why did I have to wait until things were always so bad before I called on him? Why couldn't I one day say, thank you, God, for a nice day? But now I can do that. I always thank him for today. And when I get up in the morning, I pray for guidance to get through today for the day. And it helps because I can remember back when things were so bad, I never said the Lord's Prayer. I never said the Serenity Prayer. Well, I didn't really know it then. I never said any real formal prayer because I don't know. I don't think that's all that necessary anyway if you just have a conversation. But all I asked him for was, God, please give me strength to get through today. And he did. And I hear people say so often, I just cannot take any more. We don't know how much we can take until we're given the problem. I've had people say to me, leave him. Why did you ever stay with him? Why don't you just leave him? I'm glad I didn't. Because had I left him, we would never have had that 7.5 months of communication and my understanding of what the disease of alcoholism really is. I feel that I am a better person today because I lived with an active alcoholic and because I am still living with an alcoholic, but a recovering one. I had a difficult time going from living with an active alcoholic to sobriety, to active alcoholism, to widowhood, to being married to a person who had the program. And a heck of a lot better at that time, probably still does, than I do. And I've realized, too, that through the years, that so often, so very often, we in Al-Anon, or we who are then subjects for Al-Anon, are sicker than the alcoholic. It takes us a long time sometimes to get all things together. But with the tools of this program, with the people in it, with the love and the understanding and the caring, oh God, how you care about what happens to us, to each and every one of you. I don't know, I've met people all over. And I have yet to meet people like you. And I'll tell you something. Being here this weekend has been a real thrill for me. I love you West Virginians, Pennsylvanians, Virginians, or whatever you are, because you're in the program and you're a part of me, and I'm going to carry so much home with me. I know I've got a long road to go, but I know that with your help, it's not going to be as bumpy as it used to be. It's going to be a little bit smoother. I never want to forget where I've been and what I've done. I don't want to dwell on it. But it's going to make me a better person because of you. Thank you so very much.